29 years ago, an 18-year-old Matthew Fitzpatrick had his first dream week in Boston, weaving together a masterpiece at the country club and winning the U.S. Amateur with his kid brother on the bag and his parents in tow. And this week, he returned to Brookline older, wiser, stronger, adding a U.S. Open title in front of his family on Father's Day. Matthew Fitzpatrick, the king of Boston again, a major champion, as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And there he is, U.S. Open champion of 2022, Matthew Fitzpatrick, king of the country club, captures the national championship. Tell you what, his caddy, Billy Foster, first major for him as well, needed a couple boxes of Kleenex after the masterpiece put together by the 27-year-old from England. Welcome to Golf Today, Damon Hack, alongside the great Jaime Diaz. Nothing matches the tension and the pageantry of major championship golf.
Such a great battle on the back nine. It was really a classic, you know, U.S. Open, and something that you want to see as often as possible. A great golf course, you know, great competitors, really, of course, not perfect golf,
yeah,
but intense golf. And then the winner doing something extraordinary, which is what Matt Fitzpatrick really did coming down the stretch.
How about that three-horse race? It seemed like the players really kind of rose to the occasion. Will Zalatoris, Scottie Scheffler, mm-hmm, and, of course, the national champion in Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, usually here, you know, U.S. Opens are lost. This one was won. I mean, there were mistakes made, but it was, you saw that even the Scheffler and Zalatoris made mistakes and then fought back beautifully,
yeah,
and made great clutch shots and really forced Matt Fitzpatrick to do something extraordinary. That 18th hole sand shot will go down in history. So, you know, it was the best of what we love to see and why we care the most about major championships and the U.S. Open in particular.
Let's get to the highlights. It was a fantastic Sunday, a fantastic Father's Day. The aforementioned Will Zalatoris, part of that three-horse race on the back nine. I love this 99-yard par three.
It really distinguished itself here, you know, the wee hole. There were some birdies, there were some doubles, too, and they all mattered.
Love that par 3, 11th. He makes birdie. Now, this is for par for Matt Fitzpatrick from 6 feet.
This looked like a killer at the moment because Will had just made birdie, and it didn't hit the hole, and it looked a little nervy, but he proved that he wasn't nervy.
Oh, that itty-bitty hole. He falls to two back now. Zalatoris, par 4, 12th. See him leaning left, timing.
And this tends to be his miss. And under pressure, it's hard to release the club. And Will, as good as a ball striker as he is, it's probably something he wants to work on in the future to eliminate that as often as he can.
Yeah, hits that into the cabbage. Not where you want to be. So now he had the layup. This is his third.
Yeah, and these false fronts that Gil Hance put in took their toll right here. Ball spinning back and, you know, making bogey. To go to 5 under.
Greens expanded after that U.S. Amateur in 2013. The margins at the country club so thin. So that bogey dropped him to a one-shot lead. The question is, can he bounce back? This is now the tee at the 13th.
And a similar swing as the 12th. And it hurt him. He knew it. He one-handed it. At this point, he's got to, you know, regather himself and get his swing together, which he did.
Yeah, another poor tee shot. Another one to the right, as you mentioned, that was his miss. So now there's an opportunity for Fitzpatrick from 48 feet at 13 for birdie.
Usually these are the winning things when you look back. Somebody did something that nobody expected. At that time, Matt was not putting his greatest, and he pulled it out, and look at, he's re-energized.
Tell you what, Brookline fairly shook after that putt. Now this is a par saver from Zalatoris to stay in the fight.
A lot of grit Will Zalatoris just showed across all these majors that he's contended in. And he's making more and more of these putts, which is going to make him more likely winner down the stretch sometime.
Absolutely. Stays tied with Fitzpatrick. Now, this is the par 4, 15th, this third from the greenside bunker.
Yeah, scary shot to go at the pin, but a little chunky and, you know, just too tough of a putt to expect to make for par, so he lost another one.
All those field shots on a major championship Sunday when you were coming down the stretch. And now Fitzpatrick also on the 15th for birdie.
Yeah, with that flag in, though, he gets a perfect speed. Doesn't need the flag, of course, and drips it in. You know, after that 48-footer, I think he gained a lot of confidence. And there's his mom and brother.
That's right, Alex and Mama Sue there. Ben Crenshaw speed on that. But meanwhile, Scottie Scheffler, the par 4, 17.
Yeah, Scottie looked in command on the front nine, made a couple of late early bogeys on 10 and 11, and comes back strong, and the number one player in the world showing his mettle.
Yeah, he's trying to hang around, hits that one beautifully to 6 feet, the 17th, of course, steeped in history. Now this for birdie.
He's so unflappable. That's the best thing about Scottie. You know, he makes mistakes, he bounces back. He never loses his poise. and he's still got a shot.
Yeah, demeanor rarely changes. He's one back. Now the par three, 16th for Will.
This was pure Will Zalatoris, one of the best ball strikers on the tour. Just stripes it, holds the finish, knows it's going to be close, and what a moment. Really needed that at that moment.
And I was doing feature group with Rory McIlroy. He came up short in that bunker, and to see Will Zalatoris absolutely stripe it to 6 feet, and now this for birdie.
And again, this has not been his comfort zone career-wise, and it's becoming his comfort zone, which is going to change his game, much like from the opposite end, as Matt Fitzgerald has changed his game from the driver end.
Yeah, made it with a lot of confidence. Now Scheffler, par 4, 18, 24 feet to get to 6 under.
I expected him to make a good putt, and he did. It just didn't drop. But Scotty is in that zone now in this part of his career where, under pressure, he makes great shots.
Just living on leaderboards, finishes at 5 under. Now Fitzpatrick on the par 4, 18. He wanted to hit driver. Caddy said 3-wood.
Billy Foster talked him into 3-wood. Probably the right play, but maybe had a little the doubt and leaned on it and hit probably his worst driver of the day, actually.
Absolutely. And folks on the ground, folks at home wondering what the kind of lie does he have. Now, here's his second.
You see that little tongue there? He had to get left of it. Very similar to Sandy Lyle at the Masters in 1988. A classic fairway bunker shot and not his strength, according to him. But he found something inside himself, and that's what winners do.
Said he played fast, tried to think back to his junior golf days. Now this birdie putt for the win.
Yeah, that was fine, just to lag it up there. That was the right play. Not to say he wasn't trying to make it, but don't leave yourself a 4-footer.
Don't need a hero putt at that point. Taps it in for par, finishes 68. Now Zalatoris needs this birdie to tie.
And we saw Will do this to get in the playoff of the PGA at Southern Hills. A good putt. Maybe misread it, maybe just pulled it a bit, but he can live with that and say that was a good effort.
On the reaction for Zalatoris and the elation for Team Fitzpatrick. Wins in 2013, a U.S. amateur. Mama Sue was there then and there for this national championship as well. Little brother Alex, who was a hoot all week, having fun with his big brother, lifting him into the sky. Just a great moment.
Great reaction. He's now jumped a level.
He really has. This is Dad Russell, about all those hours driving to and from golf courses, tournaments, practice, up early, home late, and a national championship for Matthew Fitzpatrick. And what a weekend. These players, we've seen them all year long. Scottie Scheffler, 4 wins this season, logs a runner-up finish, as does Will Zalatoris, now has 3 runner-up finishes in major championships at the age of 25, as we hear from the champion.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's just the feeling's out of this world. It's so cliche, but it's stuff you dream of as a kid. And to achieve it, I can retire a happy man tomorrow. So
there were so many expectations on you this week that probably made this even harder. What have you learned about yourself?
I think there were expectations, but I didn't feel them, in my opinion. The field's such a strong field, so many great golfers playing. But I think for me, obviously the expectations were for me to play well, but I feel like having won the US Amateur here as well, I just felt so comfortable around this place. Nowhere to hit it, nowhere to miss it. Just happy to be unbeaten around this place.
We're going to open it up to questions right here. Brentley?
Did you believe in destiny before this week? And if not, or if so, do you now believe in it?
Yes and no. I'd say yes. Billy had been saying for a while, the time will come. You're playing so well. Just keep doing what you're doing. It'll come. It'll happen. It'll happen. I put myself in position after 2 rounds and then played well yesterday. And I just thought that this could be it. This really could be it. This is the time. It for whatever reason and because of my success here before, it just felt like this was the time. So
we're gonna go far right to Brendan.
Fitz, congratulations.
Thank you.
The shot on 18, your approach. Can you walk us through? You walk up, you see it, and trying to decide. Okay, play it safe, go for it. What was going through your mind there?
Yeah, I'll be honest. One thing that I've been really struggling this year with is fairway bunker play. Had a good session at the USPGA with my coach. It kind of helped me a little bit, but still not 100% out of it. And then one good thing is the way the lie was, it forced me not to go towards the pin, it kind of forced me to go well left anyway. And if I hit it straight, it was kind of a chip across the green or whatever it was. But I just feel like, you know, I'm a fast player. And when I look back, it just all happened so fast. It was like just kind of natural ability took over and just played the shot that was at hand. If I was a junior trying to hit it close, and I didn't mean to do that, but I just committed to the shot we kind of planned and came out a bit squeezy fade, and it was, it was amazing.
Added speed, added strength, and he adds a major championship. Look at that driving distance. He stands 5'10", 309.2 yards, tied for 16th in the field. The accuracy still there. You see the strokes gained off the tee, second in the field, and tied for first timing in greens in regulation. You know, how about the evolution of this player? We've seen this steady build in the majors this year, played well at the Masters, the PGA, but now this victory. How would you describe this evolution?
Well, Matt Fitzpatrick has been a great skill player for a while, but he hasn't been a great athletic player. And he gained athleticism, and he knew he needed it. He needed more speed. He worked with Sasha McKenzie, a PhD and a biomechanist, and someone, I think, who is onto something. Because, you know, the method that he's using is other players are using, too. But Matt was really diligent about it. And as a result, he has added another layer to his game. He has now got tools that bring his other skills and exponentially, in a way, increase them. Because now he's hitting shorter clubs in. He can play from the rough, and so he can drive with more surety that he didn't have to hit the fairway. He can be more aggressive. And his inner confidence about, hey, I'm as good as anybody out here now. I'm hitting it with them or by them. I mean, speed is a way that players measures themselves against each other in terms of, you know, who's the most athletic?
Right.
And who's the best, guy? Who's the most hand-eye coordination guy? But also, who's the strongest and the fittest? And he's now in that conversation. Very unlikely. I mean, 5'9", you said 5'10".
Yeah, 5'10", when he's on a good day, which yesterday was.
160. So, you know, really transformative what he's done. And very, you know, I saw it early in the round. On the fifth hole at drivable par 5, he flew it on the green. Yeah. Everybody else bounced it on.
I mean,
he was kind of the longest hitter down the stretch of everybody. On the eighth hole, he hit the 3-wood on the green
right.
on a fly. No one else did that. So, you know, It's very unlikely. You wouldn't expect it, but he separated himself with power.
And he also didn't sacrifice accuracy. Think about the stories, Jaime, of players chasing distance.
Yes.
Rory McIlroy himself wanting to chase Bryson DeChambeau and putting his own skills in jeopardy because of that. How has Matthew Fitzpatrick not lost his precision play while still adding distance?
It's very risky. We've seen it down the road.
Yeah.
Especially back in the 90s and in the early 2000s, players trying to get longer and losing their swing. That happened to Luke Donald.
Right.
You know, Luke Donald was a similar kind of player to Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Not necessarily quite as straight, but the short game skills, everything there. He goes, okay, I need another dimension. But players didn't have the methodology to get a longer and do it as organically as he has, you know, and just kind of blend it in beautifully.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, it's risky to do. We saw Rory do it. We saw Bryson do it in a really drastic way. And I think Bryson was on the right track, and he certainly broke, you know, a lot of new ground in how players get better. But I think Matt's taken it to another level in terms of the sophistication of how to blend it into your game and not lose the other parts of it.
Mm.
Because he hasn't lost his putter or his wedges, which are very good, and he still hits it pretty straight. So, you know, whereas Bryson was still talking about, well, I got to build my wedges up, Matt already had that stuff and didn't lose any of it. So I think that really is why he retained, not just retained his level of play, but increased it pretty dramatically with the added distance, because the other stuff then started to shine as opposed to just kind of keeping him in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, he had already been on the world stage for quite some time. He had 7 previous wins on the DP World Tour. But folks are looking for clues. The golf fan at home, the golf journalist, you know, was there a turning point last year, Ryder Cup, was there a moment that you saw him where kind of a key turnaround for him that led to this season?
Well, you know, I think it was a big motivation at the Ryder Cup because, okay, the Europeans lost at Whistling Straits, 19-9, and Matt was in the last match. It was a meaningless match in terms of the final outcome, but it was important because the Europeans wanted to make sure they didn't lose by a certain number that would have been worse than any recent number that they've lost
by.
So there was attention paid, and he knocked it in the water on 18. He was disheartened, you could tell, and it was like, gosh, maybe I'm just not I'm missing something. I need something here. And I think there was just a resolve and a renewed determination to get better.
Yeah.
That may not have been the exact moment, but I think it was indicative of a period of his career where he thought, okay, I'm treading water here. Mm. I got to do something dramatic. And you got to have a lot of want to, because he was making a good living and he'd had one in Europe.
Yeah.
But he never won in the United States, and he especially wanted to do well in majors. And he was a guy, having won the 2013 U.S. Amateur, that he had kind of this historical, entry into being that kind of player. And I think he just very admirably took the bull by the horns and did it.
He had that historical connection to Brookline, but also a practical connection to the country club as well, knowing that he was one of the few players on property with the experience, with the comfort level, and not just experience, but winning experience at the country club.
I think winning experience and confidence in his new game. And he said, Saturday night, I think I have an advantage over people. That was pretty brash.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it came from the heart.
Yeah, and his first major championship at the age of 27. Congrats to Matt Fitzpatrick. So let's take a look at the Comcast Business Tour top 10 and see where Matty Fitz finds himself, who's all the way to 10th in the Comcast Business Tour top 10. Now also a top 10 player in the world, by the way. And also, tell you what, got a lot more to play with. Talked about the excitement of heading back to the old course, the Open Championship, next month. All right, folks, still to come after the break, another close call for Will Zalatoris at a major. When will it be the Texans' time? Is it going to happen next month? In St. Andrews, we'll discuss.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the New Wingman, crank up your game. And by Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Storyline we followed all week long. Matthew Fitzpatrick returning to Brookline after winning the 2013 U.S. Amateur on the same property. The course may have looked a little different than 9 years ago, but the end result was the same. Matt Fitzpatrick conquered very strong field at Brookline. And yes, joined some elite company, winners of the U.S. Amateur and U.S. Open at the same venue. Jack Nicklaus, Pebble Beach in 61 and 72. And then here's Matt Fitzpatrick, 18 years of age back in 2013, and now a national champion, a USGA champion once again. And speaking of Jack Nicklaus, how about this moment yesterday? So Matthew Fitzpatrick is wearing the Jack Nicklaus medal, speaking to Jack Nicklaus on the telephone, being congratulated, and yes, holding the U.S. Open trophy. It's what they play for. It's the history. It's the legacy of the national championship. In fact, sometime after that conversation, Jack went on social media saying, hey, congratulations, Matt. Couldn't be happier for a really nice young man. Terrific young man. One of the great rounds of golf I've ever seen on a final day of the U.S. Open. Had the pressure on him, having never won in the United States, and came through in flying colors. One of the two men he beat, Will Zalatoris, had this birdie putt at the last to join Fitzpatrick at 6 under. Just burns the edge, drops the putter, falls to his knees. My goodness. 25-year-old has been a fixture on major championship leaderboards in his young career. He's played 9 majors total, has 6 top tens, and now 3 runner-up finishes. And after yesterday's round, he met the media.
Did you think you made that putt on 18?
I did. With about 6 feet to go, I thought I had it. I guess I was just checking my phone earlier, and a bunch of people were saying that Zinger said that everyone had missed that putt high. I guess I was the closest all day, which I was like, well, thanks for the consolation prize.
Go ahead, Brantley.
Is this a different feeling for you than Southern Hills? And
yeah, a little bit. I battled all week. I was pretty sporadic off the tee here and there. I had spurts of really good and spurts of really bad. I think this one probably is going to take a little bit more processing than that one. I got no regrets. I thought I played great all week, especially getting off to the start that I did today. It stings, obviously. Obviously, to have three runner-ups so far in my career in majors, but keep knocking on that door. I mean, we're obviously doing the right things. I'd pay a lot of money for about an inch and a half, and I'd probably be a three-time major champion at this point. So, we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
Will Zalatoris saying no regrets on this latest runner-up finish. He's 25 years of age. I've been impressed with how he handles himself under major championship pressure. I went on WFAN New York, longtime sports radio, last night. They said, is he getting scar tissue? Is he Greg Norman? Is he Phil Mickelson? I said, absolutely not. I think he is taking the proper steps toward ultimately kicking down the door. But I wonder what you think.
No, I think he's on a very nice upward arc. And
I agree.
This is a discouraging thing and a painful thing. But big picture, it's progress.
Yeah.
He keeps getting better. And as he said, he he's a wonderful driver of the ball. Did not have his best driving.
True.
So played behind the eight ball and battled. And he's comfortable in the setting, And he's kind of a major. He's built for majors. I mean, from the way his ball striking is generally, among the top. But also the grit and the ambition to be great and just win these things, be at your best when the golf courses and the pressure is highest, and the golf courses are at their best and testing, the real skills that ball control that are his strengths.
Yeah.
So I just think Will is wonderfully positioned to just be a future contender in these and winner in these kind of events, and maybe a major championship specialist when it comes down to it.
That's what he calls himself, a major championship specialist.
Yeah, and that's, for history, that's the best kind of player to be.
Tied for 11th in greens and regulation, second on the week in birdies. And he seemed to make a lot of those putts that people were criticizing him about. Fantastic birdie putt at 16. The par save on 13 after bogeying the 12th. Are you seeing him kind of rise in those tension-filled situations, because he's been on leaderboards time after time on these difficult tests?
Well, I think the putter is something that he has focused on.
For sure,
and
he has.
And yes, I mean, there's the competitive mentality that he has, that he's going to make, great efforts under pressure. But if you have poor technique, it's going to get you. And he's improved his technique.
Yeah, he's really worked very hard with Josh Gregory on that.
He just putts all the time now, and he's got to make, he goes through these whole exercises where, you got to make five footers in a row or 25 footers in a row, whatever it is, and then you got to go back to the beginning if you miss one. So you're there sometimes for 3 hours, and it's pretty frustrating. And you can actually simulate, how much you really want it.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's about, is can you focus your mind and be quiet in terms of, peak performance as often as possible.
Yeah.
And he's getting there. As I said, he wouldn't necessarily do anything different as far as his effort.
And,
and his preparation is going to keep improving, and he's going to be better prepared to close the deal next time.
How would you compare the start of his career compared to some of the young players that you covered 30 years ago? Because it seems like there's a tendency, especially in the post-Tiger era, to expect everybody to start their career like Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth. And it's just not that way. He said it himself after his runner-up finish at the Masters. 7 months prior, he was on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is still very new to him. He's just played in 9 major championships.
No, he's a young player. And, Tiger kind of skewed the whole paradigm,
and so did Rory. I'm seeing that more and more,
And players used to kind of look for their prime to come in the early 30s. The 20s have become, and there's reasons for that. They are coming out of junior golf and college more ready.
Sure.
But still, in terms of your overall, competitive personality and everything, and controlling your emotions, that usually happens when you get a little older.
Right.
And so Matt, Will has incredible skills in terms of ball striking, and he also has, I think, a great mind for the game. Mm. But there's no rush.
Yeah.
He's not behind at all in the curve. I think he's ahead of the curve. It's just that he's the type of player who's probably not going to make a ton of birdies on easier courses. He's going to make a ton of pars and a few birdies and limit the bogeys on the really hard courses.
Seemingly built for major championships and carries himself, to me, a 10-time PGA Tour in the way he walks on property.
He's got a great, look of Eye of the Tiger, whatever. Yeah. Look of Eagles. Yeah.
No doubt. And after meeting with the media yesterday, went on social media on Instagram and said, hey, Boston needs a regular tour stop. Keegan Bradley said the same thing. My goodness, y'all were incredible. Thank you for the support. Our time will come. Love that optimism. All right, folks, it was a week of close calls for two of the game's biggest names of Brookline. Scottie Scheffler narrowly missed out on history, while Rory McIlroy will have to wait for major number five. We talk both coming up next. On golf today, Scotty. No, not Pippen. Scheffler, so close to making his already impressive season even better yesterday. This birdie putt at the last just slides by. Would have gotten the Masters champ into a playoff. Instead, he falls one short. You take a look at this stretch of major championship results. Getting back to the Masters of 2021, T18, T8, T7, T8 win. Miscut barely at Southern Hills at the PGA, and then back on the good foot, tied for second at the U.S. Open. And I tell you, Jaime, I was there last week like you. I don't think I can recall a number one player in the world who arrived to a major under the radar as much as Scotty. Talk about the LIV Golf Series. Talk about Matt Fitzpatrick coming back. Where's Tiger? Not there. Phil's awkward press conference on Monday. Where does Scottie Scheffler fit in the game? He's the number one player in the world. He seems to be kind of coasting without all of the attention that the number one player in the world usually gets.
And he is, I think, an active participant in keeping the attention down and prefers it that way. And it's not that he's uncomfortable up there. It's that he wants focus on his golf. And he's like, okay, all this noise is great because it leaves me alone to just worry about what I consider to be important, which is, you know, being ready to play, getting his game ready, having that quiet mind that he shows beautifully in competition, one of his great strengths. So I think Scotty, you know, again, an old head on young shoulders in terms of putting the priority on performance.
Yes.
And, you know, where the golf ball is going. And in the end, that is what's going to separate you. Mm. And I think he is separating himself from the pack as a result.
How about this lead in the official world golf ranking? I was curious how it compares to some of the great runs of all time. Because you look at it here, I mean, there's a bunch of guys with seven and change. He's nearly at 11 points, a more than 3-point lead on the new world number two, Rory McIlroy.
Well, the world ranking has changed, you know, with these small tweaks to become more volatile. And you can, with bursts like Scotty's had, separate a little bit more in the short term. But it's also easier to catch up. I mean, John Rahm had a pretty good lead, and DJ had as big a lead as Scotty did. And, you know, DJ's whole, you know, kind of arc has flipped recently. And you fall out of the position faster than you used to, too. I mean, obviously, Tiger's dominance it will never probably be equaled at number one. But there have been Faldo had a big lead at one time. Norman had big leads. You know, it comes with good performances in majors, and he didn't win, but he finished, T second here.
He's right there.
Yeah. So he's I think somebody who is, because he's so well rounded and so well grounded. He's consistent. He's consistent, not necessarily winning all the time, but definitely somebody who doesn't have a lot of bad performances. The only disappointing performance recently has been the miscut of the PGA.
Yeah.
And that was the only surprise, really. Everything else, a lot of T2s and a lot of top 10s.
I spoke to him during the U.S. Open last week, and I said, hey, you know, you played here in 2013, also at the U.S. Amateur. Your short game, I think, is underrated. Your college coach, John Field, says it's one of the best that he's ever seen, comparable to the best of all time. And he said, you know what, he was a little upset that the greens were enlarged. Because he thought that kind of takes away one of his great skills. Those are the second smallest greens in the U.S. Open besides Pebble Beach.
Yeah, because people will hit fewer greens, and his short game can come to the four.
Yeah.
And ironically, the short game kind of cost him on 10 and 11.
Yeah, 11, he just made that double
11,
bogey.
Yeah, the double bogey on 11. It was a tough second shot, didn't get it up the hill, and then got cut by the rough. You didn't expect that from Scotty, and ultimately that was probably the thing that kept him out of first place. Yeah. Uncharacteristic mistake. He's very good at not making mistakes. Yeah.
Great performance in the major championship. Finished T8 last year in the Open Championship, if you're looking ahead to the Old Course for Scotty. Mm-hmm. Someone now looking ahead to the old course is Rory McIlroy. He finishes T5. I did his feature group coverage, a bogey on 5, a bogey on 7. I was sitting next to Gary Christian, who does a broadcast for us, a Korn Ferry Tour winner. He thought that the club choice, the 3-wood on 5, was curious. And I was jarred my memory because you mentioned Fitzpatrick using his power to get up there. And what did you think of Rory Sunday, first of all?
Well, I think Rory has been talking about giving himself chances and not shooting himself out of it with big mistakes. And I think he's been really good about that recently. You know, I think that's why he won in Canada, but other times too, where he is minimizing his the damage when he does make a poor swing. And so I think he's playing a little more conservatively and relying on his explosiveness when he can selectively use it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily pick that moment as anything that cost him. I still think it's just about really performing on Sunday and really having your best stuff when it matters most. And that's the hardest thing to do in golf. And I think Rory had that early in his career, and he's been searching to find it again. I think he's on the right track.
Yeah.
But again, you kind of expected more of him on the weekend.
Yeah.
That's all. It's, he has high standards.
He does, and he has
bursts. And we have high standards for him. Yeah.
We do. The putter looks fantastic. His work with Brad Faxon, he's the director of putting at Jupiter Hills down in Tequesta, 8-time winner on the PGA Tour. To me, Rory had many moments, I would say, last week at Brookline, where he was in full flight, and it was beautiful and powerful to watch. It has to be tough because the storyline of the lack of a major, is joined by the great performance at the RBC Canadian Open, for example.
Well, and having said all that, Rory himself would say that, the level that he has never really ascended to his satisfaction is fast and firm. Now, this was not the fastest and firmest, but it was U.S. Open conditions.
Yeah.
And the U.S. Open that he won was a little damp.
Yeah.
And so this is something that he's still developing into. It's not too late, but it's not his greatest strength.
Yeah.
So I think Rory can leave there with mixed emotions, but on the rise.
One last chance for a major in 2022 Rory as well. And wouldn't it be something that the 150th Open at St. Andrews? Coming up another hour, another great guest, World Golf Hall of Fame member Sir Nick Faldo talks Matty Fitz, fellow Englishman and fellow major champ, when Golf Today rolls on.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Hope your Monday is going well. Damon Hack alongside the great Jaime Diaz. We just got back from Boston, Massachusetts. Did golf win this week?
I think so, Damon.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for, that combination of a great setting, a great golf course, great players at the top of the board.
Great champion.
Great stakes, history, everything, and tremendous desire, that this is important. This is how we separate ourselves. This is what matters. And you feel that from the players, and then you start, it emanates from there out to the fans and obviously to us. And hopefully it leaves a mark on golf that this was a historic week and one that will savor for a long time. So, the more that golf is on that kind of stage with those kind of performances, the more golf wins.
It's been a fun story to talk about. Matt Fitzpatrick getting it done from Sheffield, England at the age of 27. For more perspective, let's welcome in a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, 6-time major champ, Sir Nick Faldo. It's great to see you. You know young Matty well. What do you make of this most recent step in this journey?
Yeah, that's simply it. This man has really plotted everything. I mean, from that famous yardage book, he's got, he documents every single goal shot, which is quite disciplined, or more than the average discipline, isn't it? And, it was historic to win again on that course where he'd won the amateur. Jack's the only one had ever done that. That was really nice. It was so cool when you saw him yesterday, hi, Jack. How cool is that? I matched one of your records. That is always one of the coolest things in golf, if you can match one of Jack's records. So, but I thought, my goodness, I thought the golf course really set up great. It was memorable for me from moons ago. I thought, it's a stunning golf course. What I loved about that golf course is every single hole has its own individuality, doesn't it? It's in a very different, not like, oh, there's six of them that go east and west and they're very, they look the same. Every single hole has got its own character and its own challenges. And so I thought it was put all of that together. And then obviously the way he played and the way things unfolded yesterday, you know, when he three putted 11 and Will birdies it, you think, wow, it's in Will's hands. Then Will then started to think about it, especially on 13T. He didn't look comfortable there. And it was a classic case, we'll just hang on. And then he played some great shots, you know, great layup at 14. Another moment was 14. If Will had held that putt at 14, who knows where what we'd be talking about right now. But then Matt's, my goodness, a birdie on 15 was really, really pretty impressive, wasn't it?
You know, Nick, I always go back to the 80s when I was really starting to cover golf seriously, and you made such a great impression as a man who really built his golf swing and made all the ultimate sacrifices, you know, to take the big risk, to change what you were doing as a good player to try to be a great player. And I just wonder if you see, you know, what were you after? And do you see that characteristic, that same goal in maybe Matt Fitzpatrick, but also other players, or is that is that something that is diminishing in the modern game?
I think you're always striving. You know, a lot of people say, oh, don't tinker with your swing, but you have to strive to be better every day, don't you? You've got to, otherwise you're going backwards. And, you know, I definitely think he's doing that in all different departments. You know, I had a good Billy Foster sought me out a couple of years back at the Players. I wanted to have a chat of because, you know, Matt would get a little down and get downright fed up at times on the golf course. And so I gave him we probably stood and chatted for probably an hour, and I gave him my thoughts on how he could talk to him. Bottom line, should never be telling anybody anything what to do. You should be asking questions and get them to tell you what they're going to do, because you paint a much better and more powerful picture. So, you know, and he's constantly been trying to improve. I see him periodically how things are going. And, he's always working on another little thing, loves his stats. And, but, you know, the bottom line yesterday, it's heart and bottle, isn't it? We call it bottle in Britain. You've got a nerve, you know, you've got to have a good bottle. And he hang on, you know, as I was describing, all through that day, actually all through the week, he was right in contention day one. Then you kind of disappear, but you've got to hang around. And then, my goodness, you know, Sunday, he just played great. I mean, that's what you're going to remember. He'll remember, and obviously he's going to remember. He'll remember that shot on 15, and he'll remember that shot on 18, obviously. I mean, I can promise you, I'm 65 this summer, so, the Thursday to Sunday afternoon fades a bit, but you remember those last few holes. Yeah. And for the rest of your life. So that's a wonderful thing. He's just achieved.
Well, you won your first major in 87. I remember you saying, I've talked to you about it for years, you checked the mantle to make sure that claret jug was still there. How will Matt Fitzpatrick's life change now?
I don't think it will. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, I think he is driven. He wants to pursue being a really great player, and this is the start. I mean, and this is, he's people want things to happen so quick, don't they? You know, what a great scene that is with Billy. So everybody wants things to happen in 5 minutes, but you know, his band's been on a real climb to this position to be able to compete in majors. You know, he won the DP World Tour a couple of years back. He's a winner across Europe, and this waiting for his first win in America. So this doesn't surprise me. He comes to a golf course that really does demand. You know, any course that demanding real dogged persistence for the week. He's the first guy I think of. I think, yeah, if somebody's going to stick around, and you've got to deal with, you know, the good and the bad, and how can you keep yourself up and just hang in there? He did that's his MO right now, just hanging around. And obviously he's got the bottle to finally to finish it off.
Nick, his coach at Northwestern, Pat Goss, would describe Matt as someone who had sort of a clutch characteristic. Even if he was playing poorly, he would find the moment that mattered and perform well in that moment, and sometimes, you know, bring a victory home or do the thing that mattered. Is that, in your opinion, innate, or can that be developed? And how would you assess it in Matt's case?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you've got to want and rise to that moment. You know, that moment on 18, especially as he then revealed afterwards that that's his most uncomfortable shot, is a long bunker shot, fairway bunker shot. So then you have it. You've got to face it. I mean, talk about face your fears. And you've got to push yourself through that mentally. You basically said, I can do this. This is the time I'm going to do this. I'm going to do everything right. And you've got a split second, and you put the swing into automatic. Once you get that club moving, yet you have to just trust it's all those thousands and tens of thousands of balls that you've hit that is going to make it happen. I'm delighted for him. He hit such a great shot, as I described. He's going to remember that for the rest of his life. Great champions find a way, don't they? They find a way to pull off a great iron shot, and they find a way to hold a great putt. And he's obviously been doing that and learning hard the hard way. He was right in there at the PGA only a month ago, had a rough time on Sunday. So this was kind of like a carbon, well, almost a copy, wasn't it, of the PGA? But he thought, right, I now know what I'm going to, that's a very important thing. You've got to know how you're going to feel and how you're going to react on a Sunday, because yes, it is different. I'm glad I saw that little quote. He says, wow, this is 1,000 times bigger than I thought. Because I always used to say a major is, I promise you, is 10 times more. You know, you take all your emotions and all your intensity, and you take the volume knob and turn it around to 10. And I've always described that. Some people don't get that. I know Trevor Immelman agreed with me, and that, yeah, winning a major is different, very different. The whole intensity for the whole day is very different. It's ramped up. So I'm glad when I saw that quote that he recognized that, wow, this is a completely different feeling. So very few get to feel that. So good on him.
Nick, last week was a strange week. It started with Phil Mickelson's awkward press conference being peppered about the LIV Golf Series. It ended with this beautiful moment with Matthew Fitzpatrick and his family. As it pertains to the LIV Golf Series, we've talked about the PGA Tour and its future. Are you concerned about the future of the DP World Tour, the former European Tour that you helped build?
Well, hey, I'm not... I'm sitting back and watching from afar like many. I mean, obviously... Keith Pelley, DP World Tour, has taken a different attitude to how to deal with this and how we all move forward, where we're all going to be. This is a long-term project for the LIV Tour. This is not just coming, sure, they've come in a crash, bang, wallop right now, but I know that they really are on a couple of years, you know, they're just going to keep doing this. And who knows what is going to happen and how things... It's obviously disruptive, but, Keith Pelley's taken a different view, completely different. One tour, obviously PGA Tour is banning the players from doing this at this present time, and Keith's going to open up chances for them to play, which, of course, world rankings is all very important, maintaining that. I mean, if you're exempt for the majors, obviously, from winning it in the last 5 years, obviously you can go and play the majors. But if you're not, then you want to somehow have world rankings to get into the majors. So, hey, it's way more complicated than a boy from Wellington City can handle. from Sir Frederick Osborne. You know, many were widely read. I was thinly read. So, hey, as I said, I'm watching from a distance at the moment to see how things unfold.
But, Nick, having said that, if you could put yourself in that place right now of a 30-year-old player entering his prime or in your prime, how do you think you would deal with it yourself in this moment with the modern golf world that we have?
No, I get the 40-year-olds. I mean, if somebody had said to you hey, there's an opportunity. You're 40. I mean, a lot of those players know, or their little voice is saying, yeah, you're not going to win on the PGA Tour. It's just, and you've, and you know, Charles Schwarzer was a great example. A man's battled for last three years, with injuries and all sorts of things, earns X. I mean, I think somebody was saying like $1.5 million. And then you go and join that, and it's now, I'm sure you're maybe saying to your wife or whatever, family, and go, do you know what, if I do a couple of years out here and make a fortune, that looks after us for, you know, the rest of the time, because I'm not going to win out on, you know, I've got to battle hard each week. So it's two, as I'm trying to say, two completely different events. You know, when you're playing tournament golf, championship golf, there is, of course, the run, the risk of missing the cut, or you finish 50th and it's a small, but that is competition. That's what you love. I mean, there is always got to be an element of risk to competition. They've taken that out. It's like, it's, you've got the no fail line you by playing the other tour. So I don't get the guys who I would have thought are just building their careers, and you would strive to want to beat the best. You want to be a tournament, you want to be a PGA Tour champion or any tour champion, and then you want to then strive to become a major champion. You know, everybody's different. Everybody, but you believe that everybody is thinking, well, that's my goal. I would love to win on the PGA Tour. And if I get good enough, could I then win as a major, you know, become a major champion? So everybody's very different, but that's what drove me to want to compete. I mean, when you come on tour as a lad, all you want to do is compete, and that's, but they've, here we are in 2022, which is obviously very different to the 1980s and 90s. So it is a completely different mindset to, what people want, what they believe is, you know, what they want, how they want their lifestyle to be. I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, crumbs, my first goal as a lad was to be I wanted to be a millionaire, but it took me till I was 30 to do it. Now these guys, you know, when I won the Open right then on my 30th birthday, and now these guys, who knows what their goals are? They probably want to say, I want to have 100 million in the bank now. Well, what's the quickest way to get 100 million? I don't know. I mean, if that's driving you, I've always said you're driven by trophies or fame or money. And so some people say you've got to say love of the game, but yeah, but you want to reward yourself for your love of the game. And when I believe we've won those three. So, hey, everybody has a right to choose which one is the most important to them.
Well, you did it the old-fashioned way, Nick. You earned it. Thanks so much for your time and perspective on Matthew Fitzpatrick, as well as the story that has dominated much of 2022. We'll speak to you soon.
All right. Thanks, gang. See you soon. Right.
There he is, the World Golf Hall of Fame member. Talking about Matt Fitzpatrick, who joined Sir Nick Faldo as a major champion representing England over the last 50 years, Justin Rose, Marion, Danny Willett, 2016 Masters as well, and Matty, youngest Englishman to win a men's major in the last 50 years. Back on Golf Today. You can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a woman's man. No time to talk. How about Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner, two of our best reporters? You can hear the Golf Central podcast, stylish, even walk similar. How about that?
They're in unison, man.
In unison, as they often are. Rex Hoggard joins us on this Monday. Did you guys synchronize that walk? I have to ask.
No, we didn't synchronize the walk. Okay. And actually, we're finally away from each other for the first time in 10 days. So, withdrawal.
All right. Great job on Live From All Week. What does this win mean for Matthew Fitzpatrick? We saw the tears, the family together. What's it mean big picture?
I think the transformation has been so stark, what he has done to himself. I mean, we've talked about really Bryson DeChambeau doing this over the last 2 or 3 years, making himself bigger, stronger, faster. But Matt was doing it sort of quietly. He was doing it on a different level. He was doing it sort of his own way. And you don't realize how much he had changed until he put himself into that particular situation. I think it's amazing following him on that back nine yesterday and seeing how comfortable he was in some really, really difficult situations. And I don't know if he could have done that even a year ago. I don't think he was a good enough player, either physically or mentally. I saw Pete Cowan, his swing coach, earlier in the week, and I asked him which one of his players he thought he would probably see on Sunday afternoon with a chance to win. And keep in mind, Pete works with most of the tour's top players, including Brooks, and he went straight to Matt. He said, look, he is just solid across the board. He doesn't do anything that kind of blows you away. He doesn't do anything that you would look at and say, oh, he's the best on tour at that. He said, but in every category, he's right there. And statistically, he's right. He's in the top 25 in every major strokes gained statistical category. And again, we saw that last week.
Yeah, it doesn't speak loudly, but I love how he said Sunday night, how he loves beating everyone and wants to beat everyone. But how about Will Zalatoris, who continues to come so close? How do you think he's processing these near misses? Because they aren't for everyone.
That was my story last night, Damon, before I left, and you and me and Jaime, we all do this for a living. So I'm trying to sort of get into the psyche last night of Will Zalatoris. He's come close now three times, three runner-up finishes and major championships. That's out of nine opportunities, which gives you an opportunity of how good he actually is. And even hearing him talk about it and processing in the heat of the moment, he acknowledged this is going to sting, that this is going to be hard. He also acknowledged how close he's been. He said, if you gave me an inch and a half over those three majors, I might be a three-time major champion. But I talked to his mental coach, his performance coach, Josh Gregory, afterwards, and he said they had sat down in the locker room and sort of just exchanged stories. And when I asked Josh, how do you think this one's going to land? He said, probably not as hard as the last one, which was Southern Hills, the PGA Championship. He felt like at Southern Hills, he probably pressed too hard. He probably tried to do some things late that he didn't need to do. And this time around, he felt like he left everything on the golf course, to use the cliche, and that he simply got beat. That he can live with.
Rex, I know you're going to be talking about Liv, but I was curious, in when you talk about Will and Matt, you're looking at guys who are completely immersed in getting and improving and trying to win these majors. Do you sense that there is a dichotomy between people with that mentality and other players who might join Liv, or could a player with the same mentality as Will or Matt actually leave as well?
I think there is a separation there. I think that's worth diving into. I mean, it's a good observation in my mind, simply because in Matt's case, certainly in Will's case, and we've heard both of them talk about this, that they dream about winning major championships. And that's the way these battle lines are being drawn now. You talk about legacy, which is what Rory talks about, and JT and Jordan Spieth, and the players who are siding with the PGA Tour. And then you talk about the other things, that those who are going to live, specifically the financial gains of going to live. And I don't see that in the case of Will. I certainly don't see that in the case of Matt. They're focused on these four events. They're focused on making their legacy. They're focused on being the best players they possibly can. I think there is a correlation there, Jaime.
Rex, before we all left Boston, kept hearing about this PGA Tour meeting scheduled for tomorrow. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's going to be 7:30 tomorrow morning at the Travelers Championship. It's surprised a couple of players because that is a little early on Tuesday. The commissioner will be there. That's a little surprising because by all accounts, he's flying back to Ponte Vedra Beach after that meeting for a policy board meeting. And what I've been told, my understanding is the player meeting is going to be more of a Q&A. He will have some prepared statements, and I'm sure he'll address Liv on some level. But I think he just wants to get in front of the membership and let them ask whatever questions they have. And I'm sure there's a lot of questions talking to the players that I did. As a matter of fact, I had one player reach out to me and ask me, what would you want to ask him? And I came up with a list because I think there's a lot of things going on that the players and even the public would want to know. Probably the bigger thing to focus on will be the policy board meeting in the afternoon. I've been told that they're going to address two things. One, sort of how the new fall schedule is coming together. We've talked about this in the past where they're trying to come up with a concept of maybe three or four marquee events that are played around the globe to sort of reward those top players. And this is in direct response to what Liv is doing. This is in direct response to this threat. And there's also going to be a discussion about how they further the relationship with the DP World Tour. We all know about the alignment that they had with the DP World Tour a few years ago. We have the Scottish Open, which is a co-sanctioned event coming up in just 2 weeks. And I think the idea is they want to go in deeper. They want to be more closely aligned with the DP World, and we'll probably have some answers within the next few days.
So much swirling around, Rex. Thank you so much for keeping us up to date. We'll speak to you soon, pal.
Thanks, Damon.
Here's Rex Hoggard. I mean, this is a story that has not gone away, but how do you think last week kind of played out with the beginning of the week, especially so much focus on Liv Golf? By the end of the week, it was more focused on the Fitzpatrick family.
Well, it was heartening to just know that in the end, no matter what's at stake in terms of the economics and the structure of golf, there's nothing that takes the place of pure golf excellence. And that as long as that holds sort of the coin of the realm, I have faith that the people who love the game the most and who have the most power within the game will coalesce to protect that part of it. And if LIV is a, turns out to be a tremendous threat to that, I think we're going to see a really important power battle. And the way it played out last week, you had Phil come on. You know, that was, from my perspective, kind of depressing to know what a great player Phil has been.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. Look, he's selling out. You know, that's got a stigma, that term. You know, it's a powerful term, but it's a very pure term in terms of what's happening here.
Yeah.
He's taking the money. He's giving everything else that he sort of gained throughout his career in terms of why people feel he's a great player and where his place in history is and kind of pushing it to the side. And that's a big decision that's why I asked Rex, you know, do you think that applies to Matt or Will Zalatoris?
Well, you can't duplicate Will Zalatoris, Matt Fitzpatrick, Scotty Scheffler coming down the stretch on a Sunday at one of the greatest golf clubs in this country for a national championship. You can't duplicate that in a 54-hole shotgun start overseas in Portland.
I would hate to see golf lose that element, that dimension. However, there's no question that this offer from LIV Golf will enhance these players individually tremendously monetarily.
Yeah.
And as Nick Faldo was saying, I mean, what's important to you? Why do you play? Gio Valente used to ask guys, you know, why do you play? It was the first question you'd ask. He's a sports psychologist.
Yes.
And, you know, the great players played for mastery.
Ego versus mastery.
Yes.
Exactly right.
And ego is money.
Correct.
That's a substitute for money. That's why I wonder if there's a shift. And the priorities have just changed. And I'm a dinosaur. And I'm thinking.
Well, I'm right with you. I'm what you call stegosaurus. if you're a bronchiosaurus. I mean, listen, the coming down the stretch in a major, I guess I'm curious if it changed any minds. If there were players that were in the field or watching at home and seeing this battle at this cathedral of American sport, Wrigley Field, Fenway Park.
Yeah.
In the country club, I mean, we're talking about one of the hallowed places in sport, and you're seeing these players doing everything they can to figure out a way to get this tiny ball into a tiny hole. And, man, that's what you want to think that
that's
Tom
why we're
Brady.
Here.
That's why Tom Brady's Tom Brady and Jordan's Jordan. The riches come after. It's about being inside the ropes or being in the ring or being on that field and wanting to see if your buddy shoots 65, you're finding a way to shoot 64.
You know, Damon, you put it beautifully, you know, and if that part of the game is no longer of the same value, then I think that the stature of golf itself starts to lower it. And so we're really talking about the soul of the game at stake right now. And, you know, athletics, professional athletics are about, you know, individual contracts and individual legacies and life off the field more so than they've ever been. Yeah. So I understand that part, but I think you hit... You know, when you say, did it change any minds?
Yeah.
I would hope so. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's such a silly answer. It's such a light answer. But you know, you talk to all the players from the past, and they go, this is what we dreamed about. And when Tiger Woods says that, that's what he dreamed about. Why was he great?
Yeah.
If you don't have that dream, you're probably not going to be great, and it's easier to take the money.
Mm.
And, you know, right now we're just at a place where I think what's really important, you said about these majors, they're out there. If the guys who go to LIV can still play in majors, you know, then that makes that equation an easier decision. If they can't, I think that bodes well for what you want to retain.
Well, if Monday was about the money, Sunday was about mastery
and
magic and watching Matthew Fitzpatrick win his first major championship. How do you want to end this show? I mean, what's top of mind for you?
You know, I mentioned that thing out of nowhere, sort of the mastery approach, which is really about just the fulfillment of getting better and better and better if you possibly can.
Yeah.
And I feel like U.S. Opens bring that out because you can't play that kind of golf unless you really love the game and really feel like you can handle anything that throws at you.
Mm.
And the players who usually win those are mastery-type golfers.
Yeah.
I think Matt Fitzpatrick is a mastery golfer, Will Zalatoris. I thought it was great to have Nick Faldo on the show because to me, he was the ultimate of that. He gave away so much of what was there in front of him monetarily to be a better player. Mm. And he got the little cups, as he said. He got six of those things.
How about the country club, man?
And that was great.
Fifth hole, seventh hole, the 10th hole, the 11th hole.
We got one up the road that looks a lot like it, Yale.
Yeah, you we know, do.
He looks old and beautiful. And that New England look with the rocks and everything.
Really I love the comps. I mean, I asked Rory. He said it's Bethpage Black meets Pebble Beach.
That was good.
Greens. I think it's a little Mahrahanish old, well, a little hillside in Southport, England.
You've been around, man. No, the aesthetics were almost a star.
And
Gil Hanson enhanced them also.
Big week in golf. Another one this week. Have a great Monday. Golf Central at 4 p.m. Eastern.
We'll see you soon.